As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, the Athletic's dedicated Newcastle United podcast. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm joined by Chris Woff, but also this week, a certain young man called Jacob Whitehead. Hello, Jacob. Nice to have you back.
Hello, how's it going?
It's not bad at all. How are you? Are you all right?
I'm good. I've been busy. I had a weekend of both moving flats.
Oh, the worst.
Never the most fun, is it?
No.
But I've now finally got a proper corner where I can put up my Newcastle United decorations I was given after leaving Newcastle. I previously lived with two very interior design conscious girls who would not have accepted a giant mural of Dan Byrne up in our living room. Whereas now I live with two lads.
And it some people are so small-minded, aren't they? So they just need to let a bit of Dan Byrne into their lives.
Man. Exactly. And I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire last night as a phone-a-friend, which is the other fun thing from this week.
Did you get the question right?
No. Oh. I didn't get it wrong, but I feel that's the most important thing. I didn't send him down the garden path and cost him
$32,000.
I didn't know it. I said Jeremy Clarkson didn't know it either. So,
good heavens.
What can you do?
Chris Woff's here as well. Chris, you're right. What do you think of that? Jacob's on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
If there was a game show that I would have guessed that Jacob would be on, it wouldn't have been Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, actually. I know that, Taylor, you're often on Chase or whatever it's called, The Chase.
Yeah, good.
I think I would have gone for Jacob. I think I would have gone pointless. I can imagine that he'd know some really niche sort of stupid knowledge about something.
I'd have gone Man v Food for you with a hot dog eating contest.
That's the dream.
Very good. Yeah. Excellent. Definitely. Are you all right, Chris? Have you dried out yet from Saturday?
Yes, I see that on our running order we have a message from Dominic saying that he saw a very soggy Woff past me on the way to the media suite at half-time. Could do with investing in some Gore-Tex. He is correct. Unfortunately, with no Culkin there, I couldn't borrow one of his many coats that he has. It was absolutely ludicrous during that first half.
It was, wasn't it?
The wind was blowing the rain in, then there was hail and everything, and the way that the St. James's press box is probably the best located in the Premier League for many ways when it's not wet. When it's wet, it's terrible because they basically was built pre-laptop of the size that they are era now, and so we have these sort of Perspex screens over the top, and all they do is just drip more water onto your laptops.
Bless
but
you.
I was resourceful, and because I've learned from this in the past, and I'd seen the weather forecast in advance, and you know I love my weather forecast before a game, I had taken towels, and my colleagues sitting beside me, Steve Maid, who covers Wolves, and also Damien Spellman from PA, were very, very grateful for the fact that they were able to cover their laptops with my towels. So that's why I turned up looking like I'd brought my shopping with me in a massive bag.
I do think you should also get a lot of credit for not going inside like sort of other unnamed journalists, actually having some fortitude. We all know if George had been about, he'd have been in before the first rain actually started falling.
He would have smelled it coming, wouldn't he?
Well, I think also given his heated gilet, it's quite a serious electrocution risk if he's outside.
Exactly. I mean, I was concerned that my laptop was going to like explode at one stage, but it seems to have just about survived. So
and the price you have to pay, Chris, for a fantastic view of St. James's Park, that's what it is, you see.
Quite.
Absolutely.
Come on, you Maggies.
Well then, let's have a little chat about that game. Wolves were shown the door, weren't they? Not as much team news as last week, Chris, but Dan Burn's start did upset a few of the doommongers, didn't it?
I think the surprising thing was that from the Blackburn game, there was actually only one change, and that was Sven Botman, who had been quote-unquote rested, as Eddie Howard said, after the Blackburn match, and then again on Friday, was back into the side, Jamal Lascelles dropping out, and that was the only change to the 11. So Jacob Murphy continued as the right-sided forward. I think a lot of people, including myself, maybe assumed that someone like Miguel Almiron would probably come back in.
Yeah.
And then, Dan Burn continued, despite, again, a lot of people for a long while pushing for Tino Livramento to start at left-back, but Eddie Howe was vindicated, certainly, with the way that things worked out by his team selection, because although, in terms of the team, there was maybe not as many changes as we expected, that team played in a different way to, I think, a lot of us anticipated. And certainly Jacob Murphy, I think, was important in that, because I went a big deep dive, basically, looking at how and why Newcastle had changed over the weekend. And if you look at Jacob Murphy's average position map, most of the game he actually spends in Newcastle's half. Right. But because he can break so quickly, because he is just that person who can get there and then get the ball across as he did for the second goals we come on to, that's part of the reason why he was in the side in this very transitional style that Newcastle went for.
And Jacob Joe Willock was in the starting 11 for the second consecutive match since Chris Woff said we wouldn't be seeing him start any games anytime soon. That's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, he was, as in like Chris alluded to there, he is so suited to this sort of match, especially with Bruno and Longstaff sitting a bit deeper. It's his verticality, I always think, with Willock. He just seems to go up and down like a, I was about to say like a shuttlecock, but I've realised he's just getting stuck over shuttles, like a bead on an abacus. Just goes up and down.
That's fair enough. That's the reference.
Yeah. That's a terrible similar. I mean, you just kind of saw the impact of him for Anthony Gordon's goal. You kind of just see him come in, instantly kind of drive play forwards.
Yeah.
Seeing as how wanted Newcastle to break. I'm just not sure how many more athletic number eights in the league you're really going to have. And look at the average position maps, and he's right up by Anthony Gordon. And have a look at the pass maps as well. Same thing. I'll maybe share one later. And the thickness of lines, that is really is the complete inverse of Newcastle's usual kind of right-hand side progression that at least we saw from last season, is the left-hand side, particularly Willock, doing everything.
Yeah, and he's been a bit of a breath of fresh air in that midfield, Chris, hasn't he? There's a little bit more dynamism in there. Worked a dream, thanks to Eddie Howe's tactical tweak. His post-match press conference, the manager made quite a barbed reference to recent criticism of his supposed tactical rigidity. Have a listen to this.
Yeah, it was. It was a slight tweak from our normal way of playing. You know, we analyse our opposition like we do always, and I know there's a lot of people that say we play the same way every week. I can assure you that's not the case. There's always tweaks and little things we try to do that help us in our performance, and that was one today, to maybe play a slightly more transitional game today. And today we were much better, I thought, defensively. Wolves are a very dangerous team. They're a big transition threat. We've got really good individuals that can hurt you. But I thought in the main, we got the balance right between our shape and our game plan, I thought, was right, and I think that showed in sort of the outcome of the match. I don't think you can underestimate the power to have a bench today that you can turn to and have total faith in the ability of the players. I have to say, it wasn't a question of me questioning the ability of the players that we had. We just had a bench full of defenders, which is never ideal, and the balance wasn't right. So to have the attacking players, who are the ones really that you want to be changing, has been huge today.
I liked some of the dramatic pauses he used there. It's like really quite as if he was like Emily Dickinson, but giving it. You can feel the power of having a bench.
I mean, that was several answers clipped together as well, to be fair, on Eddie Howe. I think that was also, that may have been Ollie, the producer, who's done that. But you know, because the first response was in response to the fact that he changed, then the other two were in response to a couple of questions that I asked. But I thought it was interesting that he made that remark, because I think behind the scenes they have been getting frustrated by this suggestion that people say that Howe just names the same 11, he makes the same changes at the same time in matches, and that has become something that's followed him. And I think there is a certain degree of reality behind that. There's a reason why people come to believe things, because they see it with their own eyes. But there have been tweaks. I mean, I actually wrote last week with Ahmed Walid, one of our tactics writers, looking at what then was Newcastle's terrible defensive record.
Yeah.
And even within that, we explained that Howe has tried to tweak things over the course of the last few weeks, maybe not to the effect that everyone wants, but obviously Bruno's played as a number eight and as a number 10 almost even at times. We've had the inverted fullback, even if Howe suggested that's been something there all season. There have been changes that they've done. This was more of a pronounced one. He talked about it being a slight tweak. This was a far more pronounced tweak. As I looked at in my piece, Newcastle were deeper than they have been in a lot of games this season. They had far less possession. Certainly first half, they only had 33% possession, which at home was the third lowest they've had all season. The only times lower was against Arsenal and Man City, which says a lot about the opposition. They've only had less than 50% in two games this season at home, and that was those two before the Wolves game. So this was a definite ploy, and it was weird. We had like the most, I described it in my pieces, it was like the most vanilla and mild-mannered managerial dispute ever after the game, where Gary O'Neill came in first and was asked about Wolves having a lot of the ball. And he's basically like, oh, you say that Newcastle, that we had a lot of the ball because Newcastle wanted us to have a lot of the ball. But that just, I know Newcastle, I know Eddie Howe, that's not the case. We had a lot of the ball because we were very good on the ball. And then you asked Eddie Howe, and he's like, yeah, we changed things to basically be more transitional and let them have more of the ball. And it's like, anyone who has seen a lot of Newcastle, certainly at St. James's Park, knows that that was a deliberate ploy. You could see that Newcastle were trying to close the gaps between the midfield and the defence that were slightly deeper as it was. And aside from Pedro Neto at one stage running beyond Botman, and what was very concerning at the box, Fabian Scher to make a slide and tackle, and at that stage early on, you were thinking, oh God, this might not work. Apart from that, Newcastle really nullified the threats that Wolves have had on the counter-attack in recent matches away from home.
It's been a season completely racked by injuries, but there was three ever-present or near-ever-present who were all absolutely superb on Saturday. Fabian Scher, Bruno Guimaraes and Anthony Gordon. Let's talk about Fabian Scher first of all. Involved in all the goals, spraying the passes all over the place, classy as you like, Jacob. He's a wonderful defender, isn't he? But he gives you so much going the other way as well.
Unbelievable. I mean, at the start of the game, Pedro Neto beat 3-4 players and it was Scher who got in the way, so probably prevented the goal right at the start. And then it's not just that he was involved in all three goals, it's that he played the line-breaking pass in all three goals. Like, if you're going to set up and play a transitional game, the most important thing is actually creating that chance for a transition by beating Wolves' attacking press. And it was Scher who did that on all three occasions. And they weren't easy passes either. I think particularly for the second goal, he really kind of drops it into a pocket of space, slides it in, probably more accurately.
All right, settle down.
Taylor, I think that says a lot about you and your feelings about Fabian Scher.
My feelings about Fabian Scher are well known already, to be honest. That's fine.
So yeah, I mean, to be honest, it was one of the most influential performances I've seen from a centre-back in a match in terms of actually having tangible impact. One of the best bargains as a centre-back, probably, since sort of, you know, apart from Jared Branthwaite at Everton and James Tarkowski at Everton. And
Don't do that.
The signing of John Stones from Barnsley to Everton.
We've allowed you to come back this week. Don't spoil it by trying to inject.
I've been paying tons of compliments so far.
Into the running.
In terms of when Jacob mentions the passes, well, the first one's with the left foot as well.
Yeah.
So the first one is, he's calm. Newcastle have sat deep. It's Ait Nouri who comes in from the right-hand side. He's trying to break into the box. And I think it's Bruno manages to sort of get in the way and the ball breaks to Scher. And his first thought is, look up and see where Anthony Gordon is and put him away. And he executes that perfectly, as Jacob says, the other two as well. I thought the ball for the third one was wonderful as well, to have the vision and then the ability to do it. But Howe was fascinating again on Scher afterwards, because he called him unique, and he said in terms of the talents that he has, particularly on the ball and what he can do with those passes, he thinks he's almost unique as a centre-back. But he also then referred to when he is concentrated and when he is very focused on what he's trying to do. And I think that's probably the reason why Fabian Scher throughout his career hasn't necessarily been at the very, very top level, because you think if you look at him technically, he probably should be. And when he is concentrated as a centre-back defensively, he's been part of a very solid unit, certainly last season and for large parts of this season with Newcastle. But he can go through those phases of where he runs off and does his own little thing or whatever. But when he is focused and when he plays like he does on Saturday, he could play in just about any team in the Premier League, I think, because he was that good on Saturday.
It's quite a tough gig for him, isn't it? Because, I mean, just in terms of his life, he spends the entirety of his time stood next to Sven Botman, who is the world's most focused and serious man. Anything Fabian Scher does is going to make him look like he's a complete chat for lad.
Yeah, absolutely. Another player who was wonderful on Saturday as well, Bruno Guimaraes. That run for the first goal was absolutely epic. He put the afterburners on, didn't he? And a few people maybe underestimate his athleticism as well. He's not the quickest, but he does cover an awful lot of ground, Chris.
He does, and that's something which you would have suspected if you saw the lineup, that the player who would probably be doing that from midfield would probably be Joe Willock. If you just said to me who would be the player who would overlap him, but Bruno had spotted early on. And what's interesting about the run is he does brilliant with the run. Gordon does well to check his run, because I think that you would expect Bruno to go on the outside, but he actually almost underlaps him to then get round. But Bruno does well to sort of check his run, Gordon does well to check his run and then play him in. But yeah, to have that desire to do that, and then obviously there was the look, no look pass to Almiron after the wonderful piece of skill in the second half, which was just ridiculous. He's on the edge of the Wolves box. He does like a turn behind his defender. Then he sees Almiron, and actually before he plays it, I was thinking he's waited quite a while to play this ball. I think he's spotted Almiron, but I don't think he's going to play it. But then he plays the most perfectly weighted pass into Almiron.
Unreal, isn't it?
I'm not meaning to criticise Almiron, but he probably could have had a better first touch because it was that good a ball, and that maybe gives him slightly not enough time to get it beyond the keeper who rushes out. But the actual movement, it's that combination again that we saw work so well last season, so regularly.
The first touch from Almiron actually comes off his studs rather than the outside of his left foot. And if he takes it the outside of his left foot, I think he scores. But I think because it hits his studs, he kind of gets a bit lost under his feet, doesn't he? But that pass, man, by Bruno, I must have watched that 50, 60 times since Saturday in the slow motion that Newcastle put on their Twitter feed as well. I'm just mesmerised by it. It was just fabulous.
It does sort of seem like the sort of pass which you need to have a soundtrack set with some sort of Tchaikovsky Swan Lake or something to it, slow motion.
My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion. That's what goes over that. Absolutely. Anthony Gordon, chaps. Let's talk about Anthony Gordon. Only Mohamed Salah and Leon Bailey have more goal involvements at home in the Premier League. And he's getting involved again, isn't he? What a wonderful season he's had now. Absolutely brilliant again on Saturday. Put the shits up Wolves all the way through the game, didn't he?
He did, and what I thought was impressive, certainly first half, was that it wasn't that Gordon was always in the game, but when he did come into the game, he made something happen. It was everything Newcastle did basically well, other than obviously Fabian Scher being involved. Gordon tended to be the one, and he made the right decisions. He made the right decision when he passed it on to Bruno, and yes, Newcastle got a bit of fortune with the way that the slide and tackle from Dawson then looped up to Isak, but yeah, he just seems to have that energy back a little bit now, back to having fewer matches. He really is so important. He's been so important at St. James's Park. And it's that run he's added in at the back post. That's obviously where he reacts quickest. And the move for it comes from Cher's great pass, Willock's movement. He comes across the midfield to make sure he's in that position to get the ball. The match of day analysis was interesting on this because I think it was Alan Shearer who said that was basically what a lot of teams have been doing in Newcastle recently, that gap between the defence and midfield. And Newcastle did it to Wolves. Willock gets the ball, gives it immediately to Jacob Murphy, who puts an early cross, which is a wonderful cross.
Yeah, really good
and
ball.
Then Newcastle get an assist from Jose Sarr and Wolves' goal, as they basically did for to a degree that both goal you could say it was partly at fault between the keeper and the defence. The two of them, there was confusion there, but Newcastle sowed that confusion, and for Anthony Gordon then to follow up and finish it, that's what he's been doing so often at St. James's Park. He has been a huge difference maker for Newcastle, and to see him in this form, you do wonder how far he can go for the remainder of the season as well, if Newcastle largely only have one match a week as they do between now and the end of the season.
Now he's added goals and assists to his game, the player he's really reminding me of stylistically at the moment is Bukayo Saka at Arsenal, with the fact that he can drift inside, he can go outside, he's got that kind of striker's instinct from playing there to an extent further back in his career. And, I mean, England-Brazil, end of the month.
He has to be in the conversation, doesn't he? He has to be.
I can see why Gareth Southgate might, after calling up Cole Palmer, be like, he's got that role in it, but I agree with you, Taylor. For me, he's got to be in it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
I'd eat orchid.
It was great to have Alexander Isak back on the score sheet as well, Chris, wasn't it? Lovely, just ghosting into the right position and getting the header for the first goal. Lovely to have him back. He's been a miss.
He has been a miss, and you can see he's still building up his full fitness. Howe, in his pre-match press conference, was asked about Isak, and he basically said that because he's had three groin injuries this season, that he almost thinks that Isak's learned to trust his body again, that he needs these minutes to be able to really feel that he can push on and bring it fully. And I still don't think we've seen the full Isak again yet. He is going to take
a bit of time. It seemed like he was running with a bit more intensity and a bit more drive in that first half especially. He was closing players down. He looked like Isak from last season again.
He did. I think you saw flashes of that. And I also think Joe Willock makes a big difference. I think the two of them work very, very well together. And they give the ability for both of them to run with the ball as well. That gives the opposition defence something else to think about. And I just want to come back to Willock on this as well, because you referenced how I said that he probably wasn't going to start for a while. That had been the information very much from people inside the club, whether that was deflectionary tactics as other things. Again, he came off early-ish because Newcastle are still getting him back to full fitness. He's played three times in a week now, but you can see the difference he makes in midfield. I wrote about it last week. That ability to carry the ball, the ability to give the defence, the opposition defence, something else to think about, the ground he covers off the ball, the way that he was able to help cover Dan Byrne as well on that side. There is so much that he brings to the team, and I thought that he was linking well with Gordon as well. So that's just nice as well that then Lewis Miley is coming on, you have a different midfielder coming on, you can change things, freshen things up, which Newcastle haven't had previously.
A bit of a concern though, seeing Kieran Trippier go down, Chris. So was there any injury update on him?
Eddie Howe gave a very Eddie Howe answer afterwards, which was, we'll have to wait and see. And then last night I was at the North East Football Writers Awards dinner at the Ramside Hotel, where Kieran Trippier won the award. The trophy was basically
the biggest trophy I've ever seen in my
life. Yeah, I mean, it basically was two-thirds the size of Kieran Trippier. So if that has done damage, further damage to his calf, we apologise as football writers for voting for him. But he very much had been Eddie Howe before coming, and he was quite clear that the manager had said to him, you're going to be asked questions, so when you are asked questions, just give the update that I would give, which is, so he said, I feel all right. Are you going to be all right for Chelsea? I don't know yet. Yeah, I'm getting a scan result back on Monday, so that's today as we speak now, so wait and see. But he said he felt all right, so hopefully on that front, yes, he shouldn't be too bad, but we'll wait and see on that front.
His replacement who came on for him did all right though as well, didn't he? Jacob Tino Livramento, Newcastle's 20th goal scorer this season, a fabulous bursting run through the midfield and into the box, and then kind of bundled it over the line, but they all count, don't they?
I absolutely love this goal because the first half is so beautiful, and the finish bundled in. It looked so accidental. It looked like closest to an own goal, which was an actual goal of possibly any finish I've actually seen. Remarkable, but good for him to get his first Newcastle goal.
Yeah, I was watching that. I watched the match in Shearer's Bar on Saturday, and when that ball went into the net, all I could hear, because we didn't have commentary in the bar, we just had the audio from the stadium, but in my head I could hear John Anderson laughing, which I thought, That's exactly what would be happening at that point. We had an email as well from Peter Howie. Peter says, I can't find the stats anywhere, but after Tino, Richie and Willock scoring in recent games, surely Newcastle have the most amount of different Premier League goal scorers of any other team this season.
Peter, I have the answer. You're correct. By a distance. So Newcastle have had 19 different scorers in the Premier League this season, plus Lewis Hall scoring in the Carabao Cup at Old Trafford. That is pretty much the entirety of the first team squad, apart from the likes of Dummett, Elliot Hansen, Emil Kraft. And it's a distance clear of the other Premier League teams as well. I think the next highest is 15 Yeah. I'd say that is Arsenal, Everton, Fulham and Spurs. So
they're one off a Premier League record, I believe. Wow. Man United in 2012-13 got 20 different goal scorers in the Premier League, so Newcastle are one off that.
Who'd Newcastle got last day of the season? If there's a penalty, surely...
Brentford away.
Right.
Give it to Paul Dummett.
Give a penalty to Dummett, wax it in, off into the sunset, everyone's it. Happy.
I just wanted to say as well, I see that Peter's email address is from Morgue Dairy, which is very nice ice cream. So yeah, I just wanted to... if anyone's not tried it, it's up in Northumberland, so...
Thanks for that, Chris.
I cannot believe how blatantly you're wangling for a free sample there, Chris. You're so openly with your intentions.
I am.
Summer just round the corner.
We absolutely had a decent bench, didn't we, Chris? It was nice to have reinforcements coming off around about that 65, 70 minute mark. It feels like the first time we've had a bench full of players since the Titanic went down. It was refreshing, wasn't it, to say the least?
It was about the 70 minute mark, and that was at a pivotal point in the game. Newcastle were 2-0 up, but Wolves had had three very good chances and were starting to get a bit of momentum, and you thought that if they scored at that stage the game could turn. But Dubravka made a couple of very good saves, and then Eddie Howe is able to have an already brought on Tino Livramento. So Newcastle have already made one sub when Trippier went off in about the 52nd minute. But he's able to make a very strong triple sub. He brings on Harvey Barnes, he brings on Lewis Miley, and he brings on Miguel Almiron. And to have three players of that quality and attacking players, that's what Howe, when I asked him, and it's in that answer he gives earlier, he talks about having attacking players to bring on to actually try and change the game. And that gave Wolves something to think about, and it just wrestled that momentum back a little bit. It meant that the game wasn't going to go away from Newcastle. And what I want to refer to as well is the fact that this was Newcastle's first clean sheet in the Premier League since December 16th, and that was huge for them to have recorded that, given the number of goals they've conceded in the last few weeks. I think it was 12 in the last four home matches before this. It was 31 in 12 games, I think, in the league before this. And people forget that actually, even before this game on Saturday, Newcastle actually had the highest number of clean sheets at home in the Premier League this season.
That amazes me.
That's
astonishing.
It's a stat that people forget, but it was so because they went a period of seven games where they only conceded once after between the Liverpool game and the Boxing Day match. They only conceded once, which was against Chelsea. I think it was over 600 and something minutes. So Newcastle were very, very good at home. They were keeping clean sheets. That was the basis for them growing and really having that strong home record. So to get that clean sheet as well, the psychological advantage of that, I think, is massive and shouldn't be underplayed as well.
Chris, would you like to revisit your contention that our running is irrelevant because we're too crap to beat anybody? Would you, for instance, swap with Spurs, who still have to play all three title contenders, and go to Villa and West Ham?
I think that was verbatim what I said as well, wasn't it? That was exactly.
Absolutely.
Not at all taken out of context or changed what I said.
Too crap to beat anyone, Chris Woff. Yeah. That's what he said.
No, I mean, suddenly you look at the running, and yes, it does look more positive than you think Newcastle, because Newcastle really, with the games they have remaining, it probably is one of the kinder run-ins in the entire Premier League. They don't really have many of the big teams left to play, certainly away from home. And suddenly you look at the table, Newcastle are eighth. They were at one stage in the live Premier League table, seventh of the weekend before West Ham scored late, three goals against. I can't remember who that was against. Who was that against? Oh, yeah, Everton, yeah. Newcastle suddenly are only 4 points behind Man United in sixth, and they're only 2 points behind West Ham in seventh. It's very, very tightly congested in the middle of the table, but suddenly Newcastle can start to look up to it. Maybe it's a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, you were thinking, if Newcastle get seventh, that would be good from this position. Now, sixth is not beyond the realms of possibility.
This is remarkably unpessimistic for you, considering you told me it really should have been 0-0 on Saturday, given the first two goals were massive deflections and the third one was accidentally bundled in by Livramento.
Oh, Christopher.
Really changed your tune in the last 24 hours.
Again, totally verbatim as to what I said, yeah.
It's just spidey senses.
Speaking of ridiculous things that Chris has said, we had another email as well. Robert Sheard in Durham, North Carolina, writes, "Is it time to reopen the debate about attacking the Gallagher in the first half?" No, Robert, no it isn't. Definitely not. Let's move on. Let's circle round, lads, and we'll finish on Eddie Howe. It's his 100th Premier League win as a manager, and his stats are very impressive, aren't they, Jacob?
Yeah, well, he's just the eighth English manager in the history of the Premier League to hit 100 Premier League wins, which when I first saw it really surprised me. It kind of makes it really sounds if he's in the upper echelon, but then I started to really struggle to think of English managers who get up to 100 Premier League wins. I mean, we aren't really a big quiz show podcast, but I'd really, really struggle to think of some. But it kind of reminded me of what a few months ago Eddie Howe was in a press conference and talking about younger managers, and he sort of said that he didn't necessarily consider himself one of the younger managers anymore like he did when he was at Bournemouth in the Premier League. And yeah, time passes, doesn't it?
It certainly does. I mean, his record at Newcastle, Chris, is impressive enough on its own, isn't it? He's done wonders since he's came in.
Yeah, I mean, he's won more Premier League games at Newcastle, I think, than he did at Bournemouth in obviously a significantly shorter period
of time. Much longer time.
Yeah. It's a great achievement for him to have reached that milestone. But I think basically he would look at that as he got so much more that he wants to achieve, and he is as much as there's been pressure or at least noise around him over the course of the last few weeks, given Newcastle's struggles maybe in the winter and the struggles that the teams maybe had, certainly conceding a lot of goals. For the vast majority of the time he's been at Newcastle, he's rightly been lauded as one of the finest coaches in this country, if not in Europe, for what he has achieved and what he potentially can achieve. And yeah, he's still learning. That's what I think is potentially exciting about once they get beyond this season and into hopefully European competition of some stage. He is someone who tries to improve and learn. He doesn't just rest on his laurels. And hopefully he and his coaching staff will have learned so much from this season. They will be able to manage the injury situation better. They will be able to manage the squad better. They'll hopefully have more depth next season. They hopefully won't have sporting directors leaving mid-season and players being suspended for 10 months for offences that nobody knew were going to come along the line. And given what he has shown that he can achieve, hopefully there is still so much more to come for him and Newcastle United.
Alexander Isak scored Newcastle's 1,500th goal in the Premier League as well on Saturday. Did we see this stat? Jacob, any favourites amongst them? Maybe it's Hatem Ben Arfa against Everton, or Jacob Murphy against Everton last season. Maybe it's Callum Wilson.
Alan Shearer against Everton.
Alan Shearer against Everton.
England hope for Ross Barkley scoring, running the entire pitch against Newcastle.
Oh, being given the freedom of Barrack Road to do whatever he pleased. That was there that day. That was horrific.
And smashing it in.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but yeah, 1,500 goals in the Premier League. There we go.
I think Joe Linton got the 1,400th, didn't he?
Did he really?
I believe that's correct.
Yes. Big milestone, Matt.
Yeah. Right then, chaps, let's move on. We'll just have a quick break and we'll be back to talk about the lasses. Time for a word from The Athletic. You listen to Pod on the Tyne, maybe The Athletic Football Podcast, and one of the other great podcasts as well. And now we want to hear from you. We're asking you to fill out a quick survey about you and your podcast habits by going to theathletic.com/survey24. Three lucky entries will win £100 worth of Amazon vouchers too. So whether you're a long-time listener or a new one, we want your feedback. Go to theathletic.com/survey24. That's theathletic.com/survey24. The link is also in our episode description.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We can beat you, and we are going to win.
So in defiance of the stereotypes, the weather looked quite lovely at Stoke on Sunday. The lasses would have got a result in the rain, we're sure. But as it was, they did it in the sunshine. A lightning start, 3-0 up inside quarter of an hour with goals from Barker, Gibson and McQuaid. The initial shower didn't quite become a downpour, but Bridget Galloway restored the 3-goal lead after Stoke pulled one back. Nice to see Bridget on the score sheet again. We have to say as well, thanks for all your lovely messages about Amber's appearance on the show last week. We'd love to have her on every show, but she's a bit busy at the minute. Jacob's been managing his diary carefully to avoid any future confrontations, haven't you, Jacob?
Any place, any time, I'm there.
Oh,
I'd love it if I debate her.
That sounded like a gauntlet being thrown down to me, Chris.
Yeah, Ollie, clip that up and we'll just send it to her. Just clip that bit up.
I'm judging 50 miles away. I can't have my head taken off.
She was fabulous on the show last week, though. It was absolutely lovely to have her on. And that team are going from strength to strength, Jacob. They're doing really, really well at the minute.
Yeah, and so much of it is just the fact that they just aren't making a fuss about results at the moment. They are just, even if they aren't putting out their very best performance, they are scoring goals, getting results, inexorably, hopefully, marching towards the title. But it's time to really kind of get mathematical with the end of the season, isn't it?
My God, yeah. Any gun jumpers trying to figure out how many points we need to win the league will be disappointed to learn that it's actually really quite complicated. The most likely contenders are Burnley and Forest to catch Newcastle. The highest potential points tally, though, is actually ninth placed Halifax, who have only played 11 games.
I'm really hoping for a grudge towards the end of the season after the events at the start of the year, whether,
of course,
so if people don't remember, it was postponed due to the Women's World Cup final. Newcastle made efforts to get it played at a different time to give Halifax a space to watch it. Halifax said no, and I know some people within Newcastle were quite frustrated at that. So if we need small reasons for a rivalry to start, that's as good as any.
They were shit scared, mate. Shit scared. First game of the season. Didn't fancy it. That's what it was. Meanwhile, tickets are on sale for FAWNL Cup Final versus #United at Kenilworth Road. Pod on the Tyne hoping to be there in force. Chris, I've heard George is readying himself for an assault on the South.
He is indeed. We know how much he loves going down there.
He's got a place down there by now, you know.
Exactly. But he is actually really, really looking forward to this game. I mean, he'd said long before Newcastle had actually got through to the final, he's like, I really want to go, and I know he is planning to go down that weekend. I believe that Ollie may even be there, and Jacob, I think you're going to try and go along, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll hop up. It's close to 20 minutes up on the Thames Link. I'll be there. I'm still trying to decide which shirt to wear. I'm in my bright yellow #United or my black and white Newcastle, but sometimes you've got to support the local side.
Yeah, I mean, Amber will fold you in half if you wear the #United shirt. I hope you do realise that.
Fold some people in the pitch first. Surely there's not time for me. I'll be looking like a hashtag at the end of it, jeez.
Right. We've got to give another shout out to George's fabulous article on the Lasses as well. A brilliant read. We've had loads of lovely feedback about it as well, and it was really well received. We do have to say Cara Milne-Redhead has gone on loan to Norton to get some minutes, and yesterday she scored an injury time equaliser before then laying on the winner. So that seems like that's been a good move straight away, doesn't it? Fabulous stuff. I think that's about it, chaps. Thank you very much, Jay, for coming on. Lovely to see you, mate.
Thank you very much. I also want to give a shout out to the fella from Wolves who walked all the way up from Wolverhampton to the match at the weekend in aid of Alzheimer's and dementia related charities, which was incredibly impressive. Could I have you imagine doing that?
I mean, I struggled to walk from the metro station to the stadium, so I don't think I could do that now.
Got a few fans joined him as well, I think, didn't they, to help him walk up that last little bit of the hill, which was nice to have that little welcome, because it is some achievement to have walked that distance.
Is it my frame of reference is walking to St James's Park with George from County Durham for our Bobby walk last year, and George hating that, which was a 7-hour walk just along the main road through Gateshead and Lowfell, and the fuss he made. Imagine if I was with him the whole way from Wolverhampton. My goodness.
I bet that lad wasn't eating raw Yorkshire pudding straight out of the packet, though, like you were. You complete weirdo.
If anything, he was. That's pure carbs. That's pure energy. He needs that sort of thing in him. You watch the Olympic marathon coming up. They're just mainlining Yorkshire puddings the whole way through, mile 10, fabulous. Mile 20.
Manny Singh Kang, that's the guy's name, who did the walk. Wonderful stuff. Raised an awful lot of money as well, and was cheered over the line by hordes of Geordies when he arrived at St James's Park. Brilliant stuff. Right, thank you very much, Jacob. Cheers for your time.
See you, Tara.
Thanks very much, Chris.
You're very welcome. I just wanted to quickly reference as well that the war flags display before the game on Saturday, which was a long banner which said Brothers in Arms and had the Newcastle squad standing,
of course,
waiting, holding arms as if waiting for a penalty shootout, and obviously was in reference to the fact that Mark Knopfler was there with the world debut of his reworked version of Local Hero, with many guitarists contributing, and I just thought that encapsulated really, certainly at a difficult moment as it's been over the last few months for Newcastle United, I thought that encapsulated very, very nicely.
Yeah, as a Geordie guitarist, I'm quite disappointed I didn't get a nod for that one. I thought I might have been in there, but never mind. Maybe it's next time, maybe it's when they remake it in another 20 years or so. Right then, that's it. Thank you very much. Get yourselves in touch at Pod on the Tyne on Twitter or X, and email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. From all of us, thank you very much for listening. We'll speak to you very, very soon. Take care. Goodbye.
The Athletic.